Accession number 28462, reel number 3.
Ian Templer, reel 3. So we're at the beginning then of your training.
Yep.
And you're learning how to fly a tiger moth.
That's right.
And you were there for 5 months, and this rate...
Oh, no, I was only at Elmden. The elementary flying training went on till... middle of September, about. And I went... I had about 12 and a half hours before I went solo, which was rather long.
And why was that?
Well, it was mainly because I just could not get the thing down on the ground properly. But it suddenly came. And I put it down to the fact that my instructor, Flight Lieutenant G, was the chief instructor. And he wasn't going to have one of his pupils fail. So he was very patient. And eventually, I think it was one Saturday afternoon, we'd been up, and he said, all right, taxi over there. You can go and have a go. So I went off, and I did a perfect landing. I thought, gosh, that's great. Taxied back to him. He said, oh, I didn't see that. You better do another one, which was routine. So that was all done.
And the second landing was okay?
Yep, yeah. So I was quite happy then.
What were your sensations when you first went up for the first time? Were you comfortable? Were you conscious of the competence of your instructor?
I was quite comfortable. Oh, I was absolutely confident of him, yes. He was a first-rate instructor. And he really taught me to fly on instruments. I mean, with a tiger moth, it's so light that anything can throw you off course. And we were doing sort of navigation exercises. His voice would come over, keep the bloody needle straight. It would just diverge slightly because the tiger moth didn't have a gyro compass, it just had an ordinary magnetic compass, and of course, as you know, I mean, they swing. If you turn, it starts swinging. You've got to correct very quickly to get it to keep on course. So he taught me a lot. They were very good, the RAF instructors. They were really first class.
I mean, irascible or patient or...?
Patient, but firm, you know. I mean, sort of... Landing. Get the bloody stick back. Okay, you expected that. If you weren't doing it quite right, you expected to be shouted at. And then, I mean, that's part of discipline always.
He was sitting beside you or behind you?
Behind, yeah.
Behind, right, of course, yeah. And what a great feeling of exhilaration for you. This is something you always wanted to do
as
a child.
Yeah.
And here you were at the controls of your own plane.
Yeah.
I mean, a wonderful moment.
It was, yes. You know, I felt quite happy, quite confident. I just felt, now, this is the time, this is it. And it came off all right.
Thank God. How many people in your draft failed?
I don't think any did. One nearly did. In fact, he'd been turned down. And he went out when everybody was at lunch, got some fitter on the ground to swing a prop for him, taxied out, took off and landed, and he was allowed to stay on the course.
He'd already been
given his notice.
Oh really? And he said, right, I'm going to show these people, and they let him stay on. I suppose you conclude from that they were pretty desperate to get their quota.
Well, they were, but unfortunately he came with, well, this will come later on, he came with me to our first operational squadron and flew into a hill with two passengers in the fog. This is very sad. However,
what about the theory side of it? I mean, you were packing a lot of information in a short. Do you remember it being a lot of hard work?
It wasn't desperately hard work at Elmden. There wasn't a lot of theory, really. I mean, you there was a certain amount. We had some lectures, but it was mostly flying. And
so you went off on your solo, then you would have done cross-country trips, I suppose.
Oh, yes, and we did cross-countries and then exercises like aerobatics, spinning, forced landings, or You didn't actually do a forced landing, but you did a sort of dummy forced landing.
Getting out of a spin, you were told how to do that.
No, I didn't. I think we did spins in Tiger Moths, actually. Aerobatics. Oh, yes, we did spins, yeah, spinning. Spinning, steep turns, forced landing, aerobatics. I wasn't much good at aerobatics, actually. Instrument flying. Oh, and the other thing we did was link trainers, which is now the flight simulator. The link trainer was just a sort of box in which you practice blind flying. And it responded in turns and banks and things like that. And that I was good at. It was the one thing I got above average at.
So this was just basically a box on a pivot, really? And you,
yeah, that's right, yeah.
And you had a voice over through your headphones saying, do this, do that? Or
Yeah, I think we did, actually. Or they gave you a course to steer, and there was a sort of a tracer attached which showed what you'd done. So if your course had, say, been a square like that, and you'd gone off there somewhere, it would show what you'd done. You could see what you'd done after. But if you kept on the right course, you were accurate.
And how did you find the cross countries? Were you confident in your navigation? That was,
well, there were, at that stage, the cross countries were very short, and in fact, I seem to remember going to cross country to Desford. Well, that was only 25 minutes, and I think if I remember correctly, there was a railway line, which was quite which was a good landmark.
Probably flew slower than the train.
Yeah. So the cross countries there were pretty elementary, actually. Later on, we get into more complicated ones.
And what about communication, RT, and
none of that. There was no RT, no.
Nothing on the planes at all.
No, no.
No Morse, you weren't taught.
No. Well, we did learn some Morse at one stage, but I never actually had to use it.
And recognition of airports from the air and so forth. That was just.
No, we didn't have anything like that. Of course, any landing grounds we went to were RAF stations anyway, and providing your navigation was all right, you got to the right spot.
So you go through the course and you. You all graduate, you all get your wings.
Not at that stage,
sorry,
no.
Sorry, you come to the...
We then went on, that was the elementary flying training. Then we went on to service flying training school. And I went to Peterborough. The course split there. Some went to Netheravon and some went to Peterborough. And that was middle of September 1940.
Just after the Battle of Britain? Again, you weren't really... You didn't see any of that?
Nope.
Nothing at all.
Nothing at all.
A long way
from
that. Yeah. Where you were training.
Well, you see, we're up in the Midlands. We're
a
long way from.
Yeah.
We did hear something of it. Obviously, there was a certain amount in the papers.
Mm. And so then you're off to Peterborough and.
Peterborough and Hawker Hearts, which was. They were, Hawker Hearts. There was a range of Hawker aircraft. There was the Hawker Demon, the Hawker Hart, the Hawker Osprey, which was the naval version of the Hawker Demon, I think. They were biplanes, of course. And I don't know if you know what they look like. They look like that.
Biplane.
Yeah. Lovely aeroplane, actually.
Sorry, the Tiger Moth, did you develop an affection for it? Did you?
Oh, yes. But I developed more an affection for the Hawker Hart.
Because it was?
Well, it was more powerful. It was much more responsive. It was obviously heavier. My one problem with it was that the brakes operated on the tops of the rudder pedals, and I was only just long enough to reach them. So there were occasions where I was sort of frantically trying to slow down on the ground, and found it a bit difficult, but it all worked all right in the end. So we they had a satellite aerodrome at Peterborough where we did a lot of our flying, and we used to have to go out in a truck to this place, or a lorry. But for some reason, my instructor nearly always decided he would take me in the aeroplane. So that let me out of quite a bit of discomfort. So there we went through all the sort of routines of familiarity and how this aeroplane worked and how it felt and usual sort of things, practice this, practice that. And then we had to do quite a bit more cross-country work, aerobatics. The one thing about the Hawker Hart was I enjoyed was spinning it. I don't know why, but the feeling of it finally stalling and falling into a spin was a bit like going on a roundabout, I suppose. And that was a lovely feature. And then the satisfaction of coming out of it.
And how were you told to get out of the spin in a Hawker Hart?
Well, I think I'm right in saying you centred the controls, pushed the control column forward, so that you eventually came out in a dive, and then you got full control again.
And there was an instructor with you for part of the time?
There was for the first few spins, and then went up solo, and I've got here September 27th with the instructor spinning, five left, and then just after that, on my own, spinning, three left, two right. So you knew, you know, how many times you'd turned. You had to be able to do that.
And now I suppose you were beginning to do formation flying?
No, I don't think we did. I've got no formation flying. No, we didn't do any formation flying then, I don't think. Oh, yes, we did. Beg your pardon. Later on, November. October formation flying. While I was at Peterborough, I remember the raid on Coventry. They were coming over Peterborough all night long. And we didn't know till the morning, of course, what had happened. We had, while we were at Oldham, actually, we had air raids there. And we couldn't stay in we were billeted, actually, in the terminal building, which, as I mentioned earlier, was all glass. And we'd only wanted one bomb on our aerodrome for that to shatter completely. So they were then building what is now the airport hotel, and it had cellars, and we were allowed to go and sleep in that. So we used to dress up in all our flying gear, because it was quite cold at night down there. And we'd come out in the morning, and there was great lines of fire in Birmingham. Terrible sight. And, of course, they did a hell of a lot of damage there. One night, they hit the wages office of the Dunlop Company at Fort Dunlop. And it was their proud boast that they still paid the wages the next day.
And what about Coventry? Did you go into Coventry after the bombing? Was it? How far is it?
No, we didn't, actually, no. No.
And what were your feelings? I mean, was it anger?
Well, we didn't really know what had happened. See, so little of that got out.
The fact that Coventry had been
flattened. It had been so completely almost wiped out.
Mm. And were there any drills that you, in the air, that you took to avoid, you know, if you came in contact with the enemy?
Didn't have any, actually. There was one occasion when I was doing a blind flying exercise with my instructor, and he said, "Oh, there's a dogfight going on over there." I said, "Oh, can I have a look, sir?" "No, stay where you are." Probably somebody got shot down. So I never saw any of that.
So what other aspects of the training on the Hawker Hart stick in your mind? It was a sweeter plane to fly it.
The only other, there were two incidents. We did we used to do navigation exercises with one of the other pupils as a safety pilot, so that the pilot was flying blind and the chap in the back was navigating and telling him the courses to steer. And I went off one day with he was an RAF student, actually, and when we'd been out, I thought, it's about time we turned back to base. So I asked him, you know, what was the next course? He said, I don't know, I'm lost. Oh, thank you very much. This was, I think it was probably a November afternoon.
When you say you're flying blind, that means that...
I had a hood over my cockpit, so I was only flying on instruments. And where is that chap? Anyway, here we are. That's right. Instrument flying. Wellingborough, Melton Mowbray, Peterborough. Or somewhere he got himself lost, because he should have been map reading and seeing where the ground were. So I put my hood back and started looking around, and I didn't know where. There was a big town underneath us with the river, and I thought, well, I hadn't got a map, you see, either. It's either Grantham or it could even be Lincoln. So I said, well, I'm going to fly due south. I'm going to fly southeast. Hopefully we'll hit the wash. And then we can get a bearing from there. And all the time the light was getting a little bit worse. And we went on, still no sign of it. And I said to him eventually, I said, in 10 minutes we're going to have to force land. If we don't see anywhere to land, we're going to have to make a forced landing. And then, by the grace of God and the luck of the British, our own airfield appeared.
Oh, God.
And the other...
Did you report this?
No. I don't know what happened, because we must have been a bit overdue. But I don't remember any scenes. You know, the main thing was we were all back safely. And the other time when I got a little bit scared was I'd been out on a dive bombing exercise late in the afternoon in November. We got this same sort of, you're inclined to get mist and fog brewing up. And I went back to Peterborough to land, and I suddenly realised that I couldn't see the ground. And there was a big railway yard at Peterborough, so I got my bearings on. You could see straight down, but you couldn't see that way. So I knew where the landing ground was, and I couldn't see straight down, so I did a circuit round it and got a good line as to what I should be making for, and came in on the right line, and I was too high, but I'd been taught how to sideslip and lose height, and got down in one piece. So I was quite pleased, actually, and the instructor said, we were very interested to see what you were going to do.
And you were the only one, there weren't other...
No, the others were all back, yeah.
You were behind the tail, Charlie.
Yeah. But they always made light of that sort of thing, you see. Everybody did.
And what about the dive-bombing exercises? How were they carried out? I mean, perhaps we should talk a little bit about...
We had practice bombs, and I think we usually climbed to about, I suppose, 7,000 feet, and then dived on a target, which was being marked by markers. So my dive bombing was terrible.
Did you have a bomb sight?
No, you just had to aim the whole aeroplane at what you thought was the right spot. Because, you see, if you dive like that and you release a bomb, it's not going to go on like that, it's going to go like that. So really you've got to fly, unless it's all right if you can get into a vertical dive, but even then... You can't be sure where the bomb's going to finish up because there's wind and speed and all sorts of things come into it. And my dive bombing was below the average.
There was no rule of thumb method that you were taught to?
No. Well, you were simply taught to... It depended, again, to what height you started from and what the size of the target was.
What about formation flying and any combat, more... combat-related exercises, well, you hadn't yet decided, I suppose, whether you were going to fighters or...
Well, I was put onto bombers, probably because my aerobatics weren't all that much good. And I never particularly worried about it, actually. I didn't particularly want to go on fighters. I don't know why.
I'm sorry, I should have asked you this beforehand. I didn't realise there was a split-off point. This is when you went from Elmdon to Peterborough. You said you divided it.
Well, there was, actually, because at Peterborough we had... I went on Hawker Hearts. This was really, I suppose, the point where it was decided I would be on bombers, because I went on Hawker Hearts, and the people who were going on fighters went on battles, ferry battles, which had by then been withdrawn from frontline service. They were absolutely massacred in France. Terrible stories of them trying to stop the Germans crossing the canals. Maastricht Bridge. They sent, I think, 9 battles out to try and bomb it, and I think about 2 came back. They're absolutely massacred, but they were totally unsuitable for what was wanted. That was the trouble, of course. We hadn't rearmed anything like soon enough, and the battle was replaced by the Blenheim, and the battles came into flying training schools. One of my friends, flying battles, it caught fire one day. He bailed out and finished up in hospital. And people who picked him up had a very charming daughter. And he was looked after by a very charming nurse. And I got roped in to take care of the daughter when we all 4 went out together, which was a very nice, very nice bit of socialising at Peterborough. And, so... We did formation flying there, and we started night flying there too, which was quite an experience.
How was that taught to you? Can you take me through that process?
You had some duel with the instructor. Where do we start? Oh, I seem to have done 4 landings with an instructor, and then 4 landings on my own. 3 landings on my own. Those were sessions of about an hour. I think it was the first night landing I did that I had trouble in braking. You seem to be going much faster at night when the flare path's whizzing past you like that. And I put the brakes on and did a terrific ground loop. And I thought, oh, God, here we go.
What's a ground loop, sorry?
Well, when the airplane just turns round like that on the ground, faces the other way. I must have got one brake on harder than the other, which whipped it round. But fortunately, it finished standing upright, so nobody noticed. So so that was okay. And after that, I was quite happy night flying. Got a bit worried one night. I was on my crosswind approach, which is the one before your final approach, and I saw a battle, ferry battle, coming in underneath, weaving all over the place. I knew who it was, and I knew he was a pilot who shouldn't really have been on battles at all. So I thought, oh, I'm going to clear off from here for a bit. And I sort of flew around for another 10 minutes till he was out of the way. But that was a bit scary.
I mean, in terms of approaching airports and coming in for your final approach, what were you taught there? Did you have RT on the... Again, so...
No RT, no.
So how were you told that it was your turn to come in and...
You got a green light. There was a chap on the flare path with the Aldous lamp. If he didn't want you to land, he'd shine a red light at you. If you were clear to land, you got a green light. And then you simply lined up on the flare path and...
And you went, yeah. Sure.
I mean, with the... On Tiger Moths, you were taught what they call a glide approach and landing, so that you, as you turned in, you cut the throttle, and your last bit was gliding. That's similar with the Hawker Hart, although being a heavier aircraft, you probably used a bit more motor. But that was the sort of drill. But there was no communication with the ground except a light signal.
And so for the night training, you went up with an instructor, and the preparation that you'd had flying blind, was that useful for this?
Oh, yes.
You felt very comfortable with it by the time you got to it. You didn't feel that you were being pushed too fast. You,
no.
Each time these hurdles came up, you felt you'd been well prepared for
them. Oh, yes, yes, yes. Yes, there were no problems like that. Not with me, anyway. Night flying was important because later on, pretty well all the operational flying was night. So that was useful. But it was all circuits and bumps at night. I don't think we didn't do any night navigation exercises there. No, it was a comparatively short night flying there. We did that later on.
And here you were, where were you billeted? You were again on the airdrome, or?
We were billeted actually, that was an RAF station at Peterborough, and we were billeted in their quarters. It was very comfortable. They had a decent mess. There were wooden huts where you had your sleeping quarters. We even had a batman. Remember the old chap used to come in the morning with a cup of tea, pull the curtains back, pull the blackout back, and say, "Nasty old morning, sir."
So you had your own room, you were not?
Yes.
And now you were, what rank were you now?
Well, when we went to flying training, we were made leading naval airmen, or rather acting leading naval airmen, which was you had the leading seaman's hook on your uniform. And at, when we went to Peterborough, we were given white armbands and white hat bands, which showed that we were officer cadets.
So you had a peaked cap? Or still?
No, a sailor's cap.
Sailor's cap. But technically, you were no longer ordinary seaman. You made that important jump.
We would have been in the RAF. Would have been the same as probably acting pilot officers.
And what about your pay? Did that move?
Oh yes, when you started flying, you got 6 and 6 pence a day,
which was
quite a lot of money in those days. It made a hell of a difference.
And what about your social life at this time?
Well, not a lot. In fact. Well, going back to the Birmingham days, one of the people on the course knew a girl who was in a show in one of the Birmingham theatres. I remember we went to see her one night and her friends, and then I think we took them to their digs afterwards, and there was an air raid, and we got stuck there for half the night.
Poor things.
Till the landlady came in, and when the air raid was over, said, "Time for you to go now." And I had some friends there, actually, who lived not far from Elmden. And I had an old Morris Minor two-seater, and I used to go and see them occasionally. They were very kind and hospitable, take four or five of my friends with me, piled into this little car.
So you actually had a car?
Well, I had a car before I was called up. It was about a 1930 four Morris Minor two-seater, really clapped-out thing, cost me £25. And, because when the war started, I had to leave it at home. But when I got to Elmden, I decided I could have it down there. So I hitched a ride home one weekend and took it down. And, of course, when we left Elmden, I couldn't do anything with it, so I think somebody gave me £5 for it.
So now we're at the period. Say you're in Peterborough. You've finished your training on the
Hawker Hart.
And so what next?
What next was the next move was to to be commissioned. Actually, when we finished the course at Peterborough and been told, we got our wings, a gentleman from Gives, Naval outfitters came up and measured us all for uniforms as we were to become either acting midshipmen or acting sub-lieutenants. And we were then sent off for about 10 days leave, I think. So I went home. And my uniform must have been sent home for me, because the next move from there was to Greenwich Naval College for sort of, if you like, officer etiquette training. Make sure you knew which way to use a knife and fork, and various sort of lectures on naval traditions and that sort of stuff. And it was a really magnificent place. We used to dine in the Painted Hall, which is an absolutely magnificent place. And I was amazed because they had full complement of waiters and wonderful service. Stop.
Sorry, no, this is just it's a real change. So this is Ian Templer, Reel 4. And this, of course, would be at the beginning of the bombing of London.
It was. That was in 1941. So yes, January 1941.
Yeah, I should have asked you the time. So you were in Peterborough then from...
Well, Peterborough finished... last flight in Peterborough was... Oh, January the 2nd. I think, yeah. January the 2nd, 41.
So
I couldn't. I must have gone home after that, and then gone to Greenwich.
So you've got your wings after 5 months of training, which because you started in July, and now you're in.
Yeah.
Okay. So at Greenwich, this is the finishing school, really.
Really, that's right. Yes.
And how long were you there for?
Oh, only a fortnight.
Mm. So there was no flying there. There was no.
No.
This is absolute theory.
Purely lectures and on, customs and etiquette and. Things like when you go on board a ship, you turn towards the quarterdeck and salute and that kind of stuff.
Did it strike you as extraordinary that, as a country was on a point of being invaded by the Germans, you were being taught how to use the fish knife rather than... was there any of that kind of feeling amongst you? You were all thinking this is...
No, there wasn't really. There wasn't really. Also, because we were kept quite busy. And we were waiting for the next stage too. So